Ladies and gentlemen, can I please have your attention? And I need all of you to stop what you're doing and listen.
This is Radio Influence. The future is now.
You know her from network radio, but now she's on the net and in your head.
Don't believe me, just watch. Come on.
This is the Fabulous Sports Babe on Radio Influence.
Hey, it's me, the Fabulous Sports Babe. Yes, it's the Babecast, and you're probably saying, what the hell have you been doing? Well, let me just tell you. I get a cold. Now, I blame Jerry because he sits across me and he doesn't do anything, and I figure he's coughing on me, right? Well, I get this cold, and I don't want to say anything, but if I'm 30, I'm in and out in like 4 days. For 2 weeks, I'm dying. They're giving me antibiotics, which I don't really want to take that stuff, but I'm taking the antibiotics. I'm like waking up and going crashing back in. I would like go to an appointment, and I'd come home, and I'd go to bed for the rest of the day. It was a nightmare. I was sleeping until like 3 o'clock. It was a nightmare. So that was what I was doing for the last, and I feel like I've been doing that for 2 years. I'm not really sure. But we have many things to talk about today. We're going to talk with Eric Erlandson. He's a friend of mine that works at the Tampa Tribune. And the reason I wanted to talk to him is I thought, you know, when all those newspapers were going under, you know, 6, 7, 8 years ago, it was horrible. I mean, there were a lot of really good newspapers. Well, it's no secret that I live at the beach, and the Tribune is one of the things here. And all of a sudden, one day, the Tribune doesn't exist. And that's been a thing. What's that been around? Like 150 years, 125, 150 years. I mean, the Tampa Tribune has been around. And what used to be the St. Pete Times, now the Tampa Bay Times, is the one that bought it. And it's very interesting. He's very honest about it. So I'm going to talk to him a lot about that. Because I thought, well, some of those people, you know, they can do what they want to. And they got kids out of school and all that. But I thought about Eric. And I said, Eric's got a ton of kids. They got to put those through school, and you'll see one of them's in college, but they're all getting ready. And he's still here, and he doesn't really want to go anywhere. So it's kind of interesting to see how you go about doing that. Because I think if you're 24 or you're 28 and somebody offers you a job in Tulsa, you're gone. But when you're here and you got kids and you've been doing this for a long time, it's kind of really different, I have to tell you. All about that. So we'll do that. And I have a million things that I have to tell you about. Oh, God, I was like becoming a redneck, as usual. You know, here I am. I'm watching the Indy 500, and some people come over. And they're like, can you turn that off? And I said, well, I can put it on mute. I can't turn it off. But I'm looking for Helio. I love Helio. All I know is Helio's there, and they said, we're going to get something to eat. And I'm like, all right, I'm in boxer shorts and T-shirts, so I'll throw some shorts on because I'm certainly not putting a bra on. I'm just going to get something to eat. So I go in and I get dressed and I come back, and Helio's not on there. And I say, well, where's Helio? And they're like, I don't know. I don't watch the thing. And so I have no idea what happened. I just knew he was there, and then he wasn't there. I never saw him again. And then some guy I didn't know was going to win it, so I didn't really care about that. All right, let's talk to Eric. It's interesting to find out about the whole thing, and then we'll talk a whole bunch of hockey that's going on. It's the Babecast. Are you happy that I'm back? My friend Eric Erlandson is in the house with me. How are you today?
I am good, babe. How are you? It's good to see you're out of the infirmary unit.
Yes, I'm out doing stuff for people, for whatever reason, just to annoy people. I'm on this stupid podcast thing that's going on. Let me ask you a couple of questions because, you know, it seemed like it was 6 or 7 years ago when we saw the Rocky Mountain News and people like that and papers that were going away. Little did I think for a person, I've grown up in Tampa off and on ever since I was a kid, to see that 100-year-old paper, more than 100 years old, you're going to work one day and they tell you the paper has now folded. You know, I expected that 7 years ago, but I didn't really expect it in 2016.
Yeah, it was, well, I can't say it was a shock. I mean, you know, both papers in this market were having their own financial issues. And in many ways, I think a lot of us felt it was almost a death race as to who was going to get there first. You know, I don't think this is how anybody envisioned the end would come for the Tampa Tribune, that we would be bought out by the competitor and immediately folded without a chance to at least say goodbye to the community in a respectful way. So that kind of hurt, especially for somebody in my case, you know, who was on assignment out of town at the time, you know, to have the basically the rug pulled out from under you when you're, you know, 1,000 miles away from home. was definitely a strange situation. But if you know, you look at the warning signs, you look at the thing that this can't be a great shock, but it was a surprise just in kind of how the way it all went down. And this is a community now that is going to suffer just because there's only one voice out there now. That's, I've said this many times that, you know, I'm hurting, my family's hurting, my colleagues are hurting, but the community is the one who's going to suffer because there's only one paper, only one voice out there keeping an eye on everything.
Well, let me just tell you something. That's the way it is in radio. You're there one day and you're gone the next day and they don't let you say goodbye. I'm just telling you that. Let me just, here's one of the things for me. I've been in and out of here for a long time. So there's guys that I know that they're getting up there. And then all of a sudden it hit on me and I said, wait a minute. Eric's got kids. He's got to put them through college. You know what I mean? It's not like your kids are 26 and gone. And I said, that's why I wanted to talk to you, because I thought, you didn't even know about it. You were someplace else. Did you think, or had you been hearing more that A, it was going to be the Tampa Bay Times, or that did you hear more and more, or did it just come as a shock? Because, I mean, I'm not involved in it. It shocked me completely.
Well, there were quite a few rumors out there as to what could happen. You know, we were led to believe that we would be finding a new location to work out of, a much more financially feasible spot to produce the paper in a daily basis. You know, we had our publisher was going around on site visits and everything like that, so you heard that. You'd heard that, you know, the McClatchy chain might be involved in maybe buying us and keeping things intact. We had heard the rumor about the Times buying us and then putting us out of business. We had heard that, you know, we could just fold all together. So those rumors had been out there. So like I said, it wasn't a complete shock, but it was just surprise and just how everything sort of transpired and went down the way that it did. You know, even when you know the end might be near, when the end comes, it still kind of hits you right in the gut.
Did you, well, you were not here, but did other people, did they know, or did they go to work and that was it? And all of a sudden it started going around. Go ahead, tell me more. Because I'm fascinated by it because, you know, it's, I mean, a lot of good newspapers went out, but I really thought that was like 7 and 8 years ago. I didn't think it was going to happen now.
Yeah, people reported to work that day. I was in Brooklyn, game three of the second round series for the Lightning against New York Islanders. I went and did my usual morning skate routine and walked back to the hotel and started to write my notes. And, you know, everybody else back here was in the newsroom. They were operating. They were working as if it was just a normal day. And then we get an email, internal email that goes out, you know, somewhere around 2:30 to be in the, you know, down the auditorium for a 3 o'clock meeting. Everybody goes down there. The news is out and it's over. Just like that. Security people came in, escorted people upstairs, gathered the things and escorted them out of the building. Very, very unusual way for it all to go about.
Now, did that happen to you in New York, or is that the way it happened at the Tribune in Tampa?
That's the way it happened in New York, here in Tampa, with everybody at the newsroom. I'm sitting around waiting, because I saw the email and I'm thinking, is this good news? Is this bad news? What does this mean? And I couldn't get a hold of my editor because everybody was told to turn off their phones. Mm-hmm. And I'm getting text messages from other people who had seen the news posted on the Times' website. I had been tagged on Twitter asking me what was going on. So I had no idea until people started reaching out to me what was going on. As I sit in my hotel room in New York, just waiting anxiously to find out what the news was.
You know, one of the things, when I watched this and I saw it on TV and I was like, I have to turn this on and see exactly what's going on. But when I talk about other people here, you know, I wrote to everybody. I remember online, I was just writing to everybody and they were all writing back saying, it's going to be okay. We're going to be all right. But then I started thinking, some of those guys are getting up in years and they're not a million years old, but I'm thinking about you. Because you have kids that you've got to put through college. This is something that it's not like, oh, I'll retire in a couple of years. You got a number of years left.
Yep.
Do you know what I'm saying? So that's what freaked me out the most. So that's why I'm talking to you.
Yeah, right in the middle of what should be the peak of a newspaper writer's career, you know, right around this time. And then, you know, I've been on that beat for 16 years. And, so it was a great shock. You know, fortunately, my wife is a teacher, so, you know, she has stability and everything, and she's 8 years away from reaching her retirement age and everything like that. So it's a setback. It's not an end career ender though. I've had so many people in my corner supporting me and, you know, offering such kind words of encouragement and say better things are on the horizon for you. You just have to wait for them. So hearing stuff like that has just sort of really helped during this process, because it has been a strange process. It's the first time since I was 15 years old I was told not to work, and that's kind of a strange thing.
You know, one of the things that I thought about, and by the way, did you say that you said you had a morning skate routine? Were you skating?
I wasn't on the ice, no.
I was thinking, well, I can never skate. I was the worst skater in the world. That's why they put me in the goalie. So I'm like, oh, I could. Then, and you said, I had the morning skate routine. I said, well, I could never do that now. That's what I thought you had to do. That's why I was wondering, is it true that they didn't give you, like, you know, 9 years of severance there?
They pay everybody for 60 days, which is the requirement by law. So it's not a severance package. It's a pay, basically. We're still on the payroll for 60 days before the termination becomes effective.
But what about the people that have been there for a long time? I mean, you've been there for a long time, but there's guys that have been there for 30 years.
Yeah, well, you just look at the sports staff that we had at the Tampa Tribune. I had been there since 97. I was hired full-time in 2000. And of the six writers that were left when the ship went down, I was the least experienced on our staff. When you think about Joey Johnston and Martin Fennelly and Ira Kaufman and Roy Cummings, mm-hmm. you know, Roger Mooney, all those guys had had, you know, more years in doing what they were doing than I did. And that's how, you know, shocking it is that so many people have put in so many years to this paper and making it what it was and making what a part of the community that it was. And it just goes away.
You know, one of the things, too, and I promise you I'll get into hockey, but I'm fascinated only because this is what happens in radio all the time, but it's not normal people. They don't live like this. We do in radio all the time. But one of the things that I thought about is you're going through this. So are there people saying to you, there's going to be a job here, a job there? Are you, my wife is here, my kids are here. Are you going through that situation about, am I going to move somewhere or not?
Well, there's been plenty of people who have asked me if I'd be willing to move out of market, and that's not really anything that's on my mm-hmm. thought process right now, just because my wife does have 8 years. You know, she's got such a, she's almost, you know, she's tenured into the school system, and, you know, it's so close to reaching the 30-year mark, and, you know, my oldest son is in college in Orlando, and my second son is about to be a senior in high school. I mean, that's not really something that I've given a whole lot of thought about.
Right.
You know, it's something that I want to make work here, no matter what it is, even if it means I have to get out of field. My preference is obviously to stay in field, but there's not too many of those opportunities out there as of right now. We'll see what happens over the summer as the lightning sort of die down a little bit. But staying local, staying home is probably the most likely scenario.
What about the hockey buzz? Tell me about that. I know that you're doing that, so let's find out about that.
Yeah, it's a national site. It has a very large readership. It's been around almost for, I want to say the roots of that website started during the lockout in 2004, 2005. So they've been around a while. You know, they were one of the first ones to reach out to me and say, hey, I can offer you some work,
mm-hmm.
not full time, but it's something that, you know, we can keep you on at least through the summer. I know there's a lot of stuff that's going to be going on with this team. The team is still in the playoffs. I'd love to have you on. So they reached out, and it's great. I have an opportunity to write, you know, still about the team and whatever I feel that I want to put out there and whatever I feel needs to be put out there. So it's going well so far for them. And, you know, that's been a good relationship to this point.
What about, is it true that the for our English-speaking friends, there's supposed to be two new franchises coming out, Seattle and maybe Vegas, wherever the other one is? What do you hear?
Well, we'll know for sure. The Board of Governors will meet in Las Vegas for the awards show, and it's expected at that time we'll get an official announcement on what they're going to do with the expansion. But everything is pointing to at least Vegas getting a franchise, and they'll be the first pro franchise, major pro franchise in the Las Vegas market. And it looks like that team will be set to play at least maybe by the 2017-18 season. Whether there's a second team involved, we'll see. Quebec and Seattle have been the other two markets that have shown interest in expansion, even though Quebec and Vegas are the only two to actually submit a formal expansion application. But we'll know here in about the next 3 weeks where everything stands on that.
You know, one of the things, Eric, that I was thinking about is we watched the Pens and the Lightning, and they were just that much better, and you could see it as they played. It really was just that one little thing that made them just a little bit better. And the thing for me is the fact that they could go in and there's like, you know, 20 seconds left on the clock as we're going into you know, between second and third, and the next thing I know, boom, they score a goal. Or they come out immediately and they score a goal, and I thought, they're so strong. And that, so now I'm looking at the Penguins being there with the Stanley Cup against the Sharks, and I understand they won the first one, but I really could see the difference. But the difference is that Ben Bishop wasn't there, and also that Steven Stamkos wasn't there for the Lightning, and I wonder if they're going to be around next year.
Well, that's the $10 million question entering the summer. And you're right, Pittsburgh was the better team in that series. There's no doubt about it. They had the puck so much more, and they forced Tampa into so many turnovers. The fact that the Lightning got that to seven games without Ben Bishop, without Steven Stamkos returning until game seven, I think shows you the group that they have in there, you know, sort of the great mental approach that team has. They're so mentally strong. But yeah, now that we're in the offseason, it's a big question. I mean, everything points to Steven Stamkos hitting the unrestricted free agent market. The fact that he's not signed a month away from the start of the free agency period is not a good sign of him returning. And Ben Bishop, you know, as Steve Yzerman said at the exit interview day, the day after they were eliminated, that they know at some point they're going to have to make a decision between their goaltending. You know, do you stick with Ben Bishop, who's been a Vezina finalist for two out of the 3 years he's been your number one guy, or do you invest in a 21-year-old who everybody thinks is due for stardom at some point in this league? And with that specter of expansion sort of out there, and everything right now showing that teams would only be able to protect one goaltender, there's a good chance you're going to lose one of those guys regardless of what you do. So that's why there's a lot of speculation that might be something that Steve Yzerman explores this summer, if you can find a way to bring in some assets and not lose one of those guys for nothing.
You know, one of the things, I mean, the San Jose Sharks are over there. I sit in the East Coast, and I'm really just into the East Coast kind of thing. I'm not really hanging around till 11 o'clock to watch a game, whether it's a hockey game or what. So what do I see here? All right, the Penguins win the first one, but, well, what do you see with San Jose coming there? It's kind of like, well, we get the Penguins a lot, but we don't get that much about the Sharks, and they are just all over it down there. They're crazy about the Sharks right now.
Yeah, it's a great time to be in that market between the Sharks and Golden State being both in the finals. But the Sharks are a very talented, fast, big, physical team that can compete with anybody. And I think that the Penguins caught them off guard in game one, especially the first period. That looked like Tampa against the Penguins, where Penguins were forcing so many turnovers and just coming the other way so often. But I think San Jose figured it out. They came out much better in the second period. They found a way to get that game tied 2-2 heading into the third period. They didn't get the win, but I think the way that the Sharks played, I think now we're going to see a little more of an even series as San Jose figures out a way to kind of match up against the Penguins because you can't have the puck that much. You just can't. They're too good. They're too deep. They're too talented. If you give them that many opportunities, you're eventually going to pay for it.
You know, I'll tell you, when they went to the last game, and talking about the Lightning when they went there, it was just, you know, they said, we're coming back. They knew they were coming here, and they said, we're coming back, and they were coming back. And it was amazing how it all, I mean, they just played so well. And you know, I mean, I like the Penguins anyway, but obviously not like the Lightning. And I thought, they're damn good. I don't have a problem with them being there, you know. But they were very, I mean, it was so close the way that they came together there.
Yeah, it's you know, it's a team that since Mike Sullivan took over in the middle of the season has really got them playing a very strong style of game. Has them very involved. You know, they're so hard to beat through the neutral zone. The key to trying to beat the Penguins is to get through that middle of the ice and make them play in their own end. But they've got such a good team concept, and they play together as a team so well that it's hard to beat them. It's easy to say make them play in their own end. But if you can't get the puck past the middle of the ice, you're not going to be able to do that. And it's because of that strong sort of togetherness that team has that they're able to keep teams from doing that. That's why they've been. Their record is the best in the league, I think, since January 10th. It's no fluke.
Do you think that the NHL loves that it's a West Coast team in Pittsburgh, that it goes back and forth like that? It's not like, you know, Chicago and Dallas or something. You know what I mean? It's straight across the country. Do people like that, or the NHL like that?
You know what? It makes the travel tough, and certainly we experienced this in 2004 when Tampa had to play Calgary. You know, with the 2-2-1-1-1 format, it's difficult going back and forth. I mean, there's a reason why the NBA went to the 2-3-2 back when the Lakers and Celtics were playing each other so much, and you know, in the finals, it just makes the travel a lot easier between teams. So I mean, it is what it is. Neither team is going to complain about the travel because they have a chance to win the cup here in the final round. You know, the NHL, for, you know, they're probably looking more at what's it mean for ratings, and to have a team like Pittsburgh in the final can only help the ratings. You know, we'll see. I know the ratings for game one came out. They weren't that great, especially in the San Jose market, because they're going up against Golden State in game seven. We'll see what it looks like from here on out. But I think the hockey is just terrific. I think if you look past all that stuff, I think this was a great matchup between two very good, very fast teams that can be very exciting to watch. You're not going to get the boring 1-0 games. You're going to get the 3-2 back and forth games, I think, that we saw the other night.
You know, I have to tell you, I love that you're still doing the hockey. You're doing the hockey buzz and all that. But in case, now that we're, when we get through the Stanley Cup and everything, if you want to watch TV with me, you can, because that's all I do is watch TV. Because I don't really have a life now. So that's why I do it. But if you want to, I'm crazy for American Ninja Warrior. And they put on 72 straight hours of it. I was in teen heaven all weekend. So when you're done, you can watch this with me, because it's insane and you have to do it.
I'll bring my 11-year-old with me, too, because he loves that show as well. He's hooked on it. He sees the promos that are running. He's like, oh, American Ninja Warrior is coming back. So he'll be glued to the TV tonight when it debuts.
I love it myself. I love talking with you. Good luck. You know I love you. I'll be in touch. But I just want to thank you for being good about what happened, because that's what I really wanted to know. I mean, what do you do now? And that's the question. But I love talking with you, Eric. Thanks an awful lot.
Thanks, babe. Anytime.
I love talking to him. It was very good, too, to get the information. I didn't realize all of that. You know, just a minute here. Hang on a minute. Wait a minute. Maybe if I wasn't sitting on the goddamn floor, you could do something with Jerry. You know, I mean, I was falling on the damn floor. You're the worst producer I ever had. All right. Do you want me to do this over? I'm just doing it like this. And you want to hear me cough? That's me coughing. It's really lovely here. All right. I've been sick. That's what's been going on. First of all, I want to tell you something. The American Ninja Warrior was on for not one, not two, but 72 hours. I was like in teen heaven. I, not only that, and then they let you run something else, and then last night it was on again. And I don't like that ninja, what's that called, the relay? I don't like that, but I kind of watched it a little bit. But I was watching that, and it was very lovely, I have to tell you. I just was so happy to see it. It means they're coming Thursday, I think it's going to be happening. Speaking of Thursday, the babe is going on a babe-a-palooza tour. I'm going on a road trip. And, you know, I'm supposed to call up and do this thing. Oh, for Christ's sakes. And they're going to fix my computer, whatever that means. You know, I after you didn't have to do tape, I stopped doing, you know, I don't know anything about computers. I don't want to know anything about it. That's why I'm on this side of the microphone. Anyway, so we're doing the Babe-a-Palooza tour, and I'm going on the road trip. Now, I have to go and see some people, but I'm going up to Asheville because I have people there that I love. And so I'm going to spend some time up there. And then, you know, it's not even my fault. I just sort of got into this. I'm not happy about it. But I have to go to Missouri. Now, I know if you're anything like me, you're going, the hell are you doing in Missouri? I don't know what I'm doing in Missouri. But somehow I got over to that side, the other side of St. Louis. And then if I got there, I could go up. Oh, I got a new car. That's probably one of the reasons, too. Anyway, I go up and I have some friends that live in Lincoln, Nebraska, the home of yay, yay, big red Nebraska Cornhuskers, which I want to see. So I'm going to go there, and I'm going to go visit my friends in Columbus, Ohio, where I haven't seen them in a long time. I'm going to see a friend that I haven't seen in 30 years. The last time I saw her, we were in Amsterdam, I think. So, I mean, you know, it's funny. You find those people again. They seem to find you. And I was wishing nobody would find me, if you want to know the truth. But then I'm going to go into New York, and then I'm going to go to Connecticut. And I got to go by Bristol, Connecticut. Ugh. I might just go in there to look at that. You know, when you go off the exit to go to Bristol, to go to ESPN, right as you go off, there's this huge thing, and it's a religious thing. It's like they send the buses there, but it's not like the size of this room. It's this huge thing. And you get all the stuff. I mean, do you just buy things, or do you? I never did understand that. You get all the stuff like, they're all, it's all Catholic. So can you buy, like, I don't want to call them dresses. What is it, the thing that they have? Yeah, whatever. And they put the things around it, and they got the chalices and all that kind of stuff, and they got the big, and they just think that, I got to go look at that. Anyway, I got to go to Hartford, Connecticut. I got to go to Guilford, Connecticut. I got to New Haven. And I thought, I'm going to see my friends, because Lord knows I don't want to go to Connecticut, but it's okay, I'm doing that. And then I'm going to go to Boston. Then I'm going up to Vermont. And then eventually I will find my way to Cape Cod, which is where I want to be for the next few months. So let's see, A, if I get arrested. B, you know, let's see what happens. Did you like those? Did you see those out there? I'm going to be wearing those. Do you like those in the little red? And I thought you'd like that. All right, so what else? So this is going to be it. Now, whether or not we'll try and do this on a regular basis, I might just tell you where I am, and that might be it. Because I have a feeling that Mr. Producer isn't going to do a damn thing for me. He's just going to let me talk like this. Is this the end of it? Can I say goodbye? I'm going on a road trip. It's the Babe Cast. Have fun. Or I'll have fun, I guess.
If you know the Babe at all, you'll know the show never ends.
Don't believe me, just watch.
Follow her on Twitter at Real Sports Babe and subscribe to the show on iTunes and Stitcher. This has been the Fabulous Sports Babe on Radio Influence. Here is Kevin Kennedy and Rich Herrera with an Inside the Dugout Quick Fix.
Give me your thoughts on Syndergaard throwing behind Shea Sutley and what transpired after that.
Well, first of all, on Friday night, people kept asking Rick Monday and I, and not during the actual game broadcast, but in between innings, some of our colleagues kept asking, you think it's going to happen tonight? It's going to happen tonight. So we did actually talk about at a couple of points, and what we both felt was that if it's going to happen in this series, it's going to be Noah Syndergaard to do it, and most likely it might be him just doing it on his own. I don't think it was ordered by Terry Collins, and then hearing Terry afterwards, and then even before the first game, I mentioned this the other day, you always like to go out the first game, take the lineup card out if you're facing the team with a new group of umpires. And Dave Roberts did that, and so did Terry Collins. And I believe they had talked, from what I understand, and there was not going to be anything on Terry's side with intent. So when Noah did that, I totally believe it was totally on his own. I think even the catcher was surprised, Plawicki. He had called a changeup to Utley away, and the pitch was a 99 fastball behind his back. So I think Syndergaard, you know, he got the first two innings out of the way. Utley comes up a second time in the third, and I think with one out, I think he just decided, I'm just going to send the message right now. Nobody's on. It's early in the game. I'm going to do it. And figured he'd probably get a warning. Both sides would get warnings, and that would be that. Except the home plate umpire, Amari, took it into his hands and said, uh-uh, that was intentional. And, you know, what people may not understand is you don't have to actually hit somebody to get a warning. If they believe, because of the history of what's gone on with Utley, especially last year that you mentioned, in the postseason, if they believe it was with intent, that's all that matters. And the umpires have the right to throw you out of the game. And that's exactly what the umpire, Amari, did.
Listening to the umpires afterwards, and I'm surprised because I got it both ways. People have reported, I should say, that the umpires issued warnings before the game. The crew chief came out and said he did not issue warnings before the game. They thought it was over and done with. But you go back to the intent. Did he try to throw at Shea Sutley? So when we were talking about the pitch that hit Jose Bautista, during the Rangers-Blue Jays fight, I was talking to an umpire yesterday, Jim, and he's like, come on, give me a break. These guys are big leaguers. You don't miss. The ball doesn't slip out of your hand and go behind somebody's back at 99 miles an hour. I'm not buying that it slips out of anybody's hand in that situation.
No, and I agree with that. It was with intent. I don't think there's any question about that. In fact, I'm a little surprised that Syndergaard said it slipped. Maybe he would have got a suspended if he came out and admitted it. But most of the time, you know, you're going to hear the pitcher, if it misses up and in and clips a guy or hits a guy in the ribs, then you're going to hear a pitcher say, well, I was just trying to go inside. I got a pitch inside. It just got away. That one was behind his back, and I 100% agree with the umpires that said that, and you and I both know that was with intent. He was sending the message, And I do believe he was trying to hit him in the ribs, but he missed. I really do. I mean, he throws 99 miles an hour. I don't think you're just trying to throw behind him. I think he was just trying to nail him, and he missed. Now, only he knows for sure. But nonetheless, he's a guy that has shown in the past that he will take it in his own hands. And I've mentioned this before. There's certain pitchers, Rich, in the ball in games that I've managed. And two of them, I can tell you, you didn't have to tell them to do anything. And that one was Nolan Ryan. The other one was Roger Clemens. And so some managers I've heard say recently, since we talked on the podcast about that a couple of weeks ago, well, I have never ordered anything ever to any of my pitchers ever. Well, I don't know if I buy that. Maybe that's true. But I was honest about it with you on the podcast here. I have ordered it. And I gave specific instructions how to do it and to make sure you didn't hurt anybody and don't hit him high. Make sure you get him low, just like they did our guy. And at the time, it was Rafi Palmeiro. And so that's what my pitcher did. And the players basically handled it, and it was over after that. In this situation, knocking Syndergaard out of the game, I think that totally surprised Noah Syndergaard and Terry Collins. And so for me, it's 50-50. I think a lot of baseball guys think, well, he should have just given the warning then. But there is such a history of this, and there's been such a history of Utley really hurting the Mets, even when he was with the Phillies, and really hitting well in that ballpark, that I think Syndergaard just decided to do it on his own. I don't think it was ordered by Terry Collins.
Inside the Dugout with Kevin Kennedy and Rich Herrera can be found on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, and RadioInfluence.com.